Yes, this is Tom Kramer. I'm substituting for Ava Lake and formerly Julie Bernard. This is Art Focus, and today I have an incredibly special guest who is now got an amazing show down at the Hallie Ford Museum in Salem, Oregon. It's Hank Pander, who's one of the most important American artists living today and one of the most important artists probably in the entire world right now. Happens to live in Portland, originally from Holland. Came here in the mid-60s, and I just wanted to say that I went down to see the show at the Hallie Ford Museum, which was curated by Roger Hull, who did a fantastic job in the show and in the catalog. And I was so blown away and compelled to talk to Hank that I'm very honored to have him on. I want to say one thing before we get into it with Hank, and that my experience with the show was that it was practically like a visual history of basically the Western world, certainly the Western world since, you know, certainly since World War II. There was an overriding sense of heaviness and traumatic, including the original wording of trauma, which is the German word for dream, a traumatic kind of incisive portrayal of almost every important issue that I can think of that's happening to has been happening to the world since World War II and is happening to the world now, such as war, genocide, environmental destruction, displacement, disease, including cancer and AIDS, the influence of technology, outer space, the advent of science and technology. Anyway, we have so much to talk about and so little time to do it. I want to welcome Hank Pander. Thank you for being on the air.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. The world is a really big place, I want to remind you.
Well, and I want to say just exactly that, that your work has this incredibly all-encompassing, almost cosmic sense of neutrality about it. What I mean by neutrality is it reminds me, the only filmmaker I can think of that it relates to a little bit is Stanley Kubrick, who in 2001 A Space Odyssey successfully took on the kind of cosmic dimension of outer space. And of course, some of your work has a science fiction-like quality. And I want to say one more thing, which is a testimonial, is that I first learned of your work when I was a teenager. I helped move somebody, Sally Judd, later Sally Lawrence, and she had some copies of Views of Mount Hood, the book of drawings. Mm-hmm. And I was completely like blown out by that work. It had a strong sense of surrealistic kind of penetration into the subconscious aspects of modern life in this world. Now, I wanted to get into this idea of trauma, including your childhood. You grew up in Harlem, the Netherlands, and from what I gather from the show and from reading the catalog a couple times is that you were the witness. You experienced basically a living nightmare with Nazi bombings and firebombings around you, and saw people getting shot and rounding up Jews and stuff like that. Now, obviously, do you believe, like I do, that that early childhood experience informed your entire overriding vision from that point forward, or am I going too far?
Well, you're sort of scooting out there in a little bit, I'm afraid.
Right.
I'm basically a painter, so most of my work is really more about painting, and the subject matter is really sort of more an excuse to make paintings, and in order for me to make these big paintings, it has to be sort of interesting to me personally, and so I oftentimes deal with issues which either bother me or preoccupy me, or I think about, or things I think are worthwhile remembering and recalling, or things which have affected me but have a kind of a broader implication or kind of a sense of metaphor to it. So, but primarily, I'm really interested in, you know, making paintings, and I'm an old-fashioned painter, so they're, you know, I'm interested in the composition and the light and the color and the texture and the space and the dimensionality and the depth of it and how it echoes other works and other painters. My dad was a artist, so I grew up in the field. And when I was a little kid during the Second World War, I never really, you know, saw any bombing or Jews taken away or fire or mayhem or whatever. I think we really, pretty much as a small family, represented what most Dutch people went through during the occupation of the Second World War. And my memory, and if you really look a lot of my paintings, a lot of them really deal with food, because especially at the end of the war, there was absolutely nothing to eat, and it was just a massive famine.
Right. I was reading an article about stress, and I can't remember where I was reading it, but that the one of the most stressful times was a study of Dutch people under the occupation of World War II, and how many of them have, you know, terrible mental problems with, like, depression.
A lot of people, like, I have one of my brothers was born in the winter of 1944, and he, since he was malnourished when my mother was pregnant, has now later in life, like, really fairly serious problems with his vascular system, for instance.
Right.
And so there's a generation which was really heavily affected by it. I was the eldest of then five children, and I was probably old before my age because of the stress and the difficulty of the period. So I was really very aware of my surroundings, especially at the end of the war, when things were really hardest for us. And I was, you know, 6 or 7 years old, so I remember quite a bit. And seeing, like, there was a number of reasons that I started working on this kind of project. It's always been, when I came here, it was a Vietnamese war in the mid-60s, so there was sort of overlap in a kind of a warfaring kind of setting, and I saw parallels. And so that stimulated me to start making drawings which sort of reflected on war more in a kind of a Goyesque sort of metaphorical kind of way, but there were sort of dark drawings which dealt with sort of battlefield, but there were also, like, experimental drawings on Japanese paper, ink washes, monochromatic watercolors, works from the imagination. Later on, in the 80s, I had a commission to do a painting about the First World War. And so I went to battlefields. I visited battlefields in France.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And discovered that this whole war was imprinted into the French landscape. And I sort of wondered whether there would be other landscapes where conflict or war would be imprinted in the landscape. I also saw a huge exhibition by Anselm Kiefer also in Paris at that time, which also made me think from, you know, Kiefer was born after the war. I was born before the war. So I thought, you know, if he can make these kind of paintings dealing with it, I thought I should sort of deal with my own war. With what do I remember out of that time? And so I started making lists of vignettes which I could recall. So I started making drawings in the sketchbooks, and sort of all of a sudden just started filling up whole sketchbooks with all these little drawings. And I can draw well enough that I can actually think of something and make a drawing of it. And then a number of these things, I thought, well, if I carry these kind of images with me that long, and it's really so important, and it also has a sort of metaphorical fairy tale like quality from, like, far, far away, all the way in Europe, a long time ago, like 50, 60 years ago, there was a small family who lived in a world, and a world threatened it. So the outside world sort of entered the life and the private world of this very intimate family. And so that metaphor became kind of a driving force to make these paintings. And once I made these big paintings, that was certainly the reality of our living room and my sort of recall about my childhood. So it had also this sort of emotional reality to it, that I could actually go to a place in my head and reconstruct a room remember how the light fell in it, then remember what kind of furniture we had, what kind of curtains there were, what the view out the window was. And so there was sort of something sort of wonderful about visually on these large canvases sort of recreate my childhood. And I realized that when I think of my early childhood and the war, they're inseparable. So if I do anything about my childhood, I automatically also do something about the Second World War. And that was a very powerful realization.
Well, do you agree with Freud then that, you know, early childhood effects basically hardwires us for the rest of our lives? I mean, in other words, if you had, this is a dumb hypothetical question, but if you had grown up in Hawaii or Marin County and around a bunch of, you know, Henry Miller, Big Sur or something, would you be a very different artist than you are? In other words, because of your childhood, what happened to you in your childhood, don't you think that that hardwired the rest of how you look at everything?
Yeah, I'm very culturally determined. I grew up in the Netherlands. I grew up in one of the oldest cities in the Netherlands. I grew up in an art world where Harlem is a city of painters. You know, right. I grew up like around the paintings of Frans Hals and Rembrandt, and
but
my
you
father
also,
sort of focused right. on it. So that, of course, you can't escape that.
You were also went to a art school in Amsterdam, right? I read that, and you were exposed to one of the schools to some modernism. And when I think of Netherlands 20th century art, I think of Mondrian. And
I was exposed to a great deal of modernism. I grew up in a modernist world.
And, so to what extent does the, you know, I do see some influence, for example, probably everybody tells you this, but there is a Dali-esque quality to some of your work where there's a more than real quality, even to the representational work, there's a feeling of heightened dreamlike state. Like the one of the airplane with the bridge going up and the view of Portland, some of the views of Portland that you've done seem to be informed by a heightened sense. In other words, it's a set of images that are put together that could hypothetically occur but not likely to occur. And in that way, they seem like a heightened, almost expressionistic view of modern life.
A painting is not a photograph. A painted world, people end their sort of, especially with the more recognizable imagery into it, that paintings are sort of an echo or a reflection of the real world. But the painted world and the real world are entirely separate entities. So you can sort of make an image which sort of leads people into this world by having sort of connections with it, you know, sort of hold them, lead them by the hand in a sense, to have certain elements which may be recognizable. Oh, I recognize that. But then you enter a world which is really a world of the imagination and where, you know, I basically imagine stuff.
Right. I want to ask you
about... Well, I wonder what happens if I juxtapose these kind of images.
I wanted to ask you about that. Do you work on those kinds of things, especially like the childhood paintings, are they done out of your head, or are you using any kind of source materials?
There's no source material.
So it's just, I don't know how, it's amazing that you can do that.
Occasionally, I may look at, you know, something particular. I mean, you know, these hand grenades, you know, I sort of, yeah, they look different than a little, you know, little fruits they throw at people out here. And so, you know, I may just do that or maybe sort of look at a uniform or something like that, but also sort of more cursory. But all these paintings are just, you know, I make them up.
Have you ever thought about, I know the Views of Mount Hood, you've already done this, but another series of work where everything is entirely out of your head, even the imagery, it's not based on anything that actually happened, but it's based on something in the subconscious, as like the Views of Mount Hood series that you did. I mean, and by the way, everybody out there, some of the other work that I really responded to, and I'll say this to you directly, was some of the work that you did in the late 50s and 60s where there was a more almost cubist influence or modernist sensibility. Have you thought about ever going back to that?
We grew up. You know, when I went to Amsterdam, when I went to the Rijksacademie, the State Academy of Fine Arts, we were in the heart of Amsterdam, and there was like Cobra. There was like Carl Oppel and Oscar Jorn and Corneille.
Did you meet those guys?
Bachmacher.
Did you meet them at all or see
them?
Well,
you know, they were like, I was young, and they were a different generation, but like Carl Oppel went to the same school as I did. You know, that we were, I was surrounded by, you know, contemporary sort of expressionist and abstract expressionist art, also with art which was like Carl Oppel, influenced by childhood children's drawings, sort of primitive, evocative, action painting, dachshisme,
modernism,
cubism, modernism, and all in all its aspects, all the way from École de Paris to, like paintings coming out of New York City. I mean, we were exposed to a great deal of paintings. And, you know, simplicity, keeping things simple, a kind of starkness, a highly expressive quality, it was really important. So a lot of the early, especially early works have a kind of abstraction to them, but they also have a kind of moodiness to them, a kind of some melancholy quality, oftentimes a darkness to them. Even very early on, even drawings I did when I was like, even before I went to art school, there was a kind of a coming out of related to Harlem painters. They also always had a kind of a melancholy, somewhat moody, atmospheric,
do you find
somewhat
that
dark sort of, a kind of a sadness, a kind of a sense of like, you know, remembrance or things would be, you know, falling apart eventually, a kind of a sadness. Had a lot of my early work had that already. Also, if I look at drawings when I was maybe 14 or 15, they involve like machinery, they involve like big dike works, they involve construction, trucks. So there's a kind of a line throughout all my work over the years, which has actually been fairly consistent. But I've always really liked to draw. You know, I like to draw. I really have not, I try to make abstract paintings and I don't know how to do it. And it bores me, and so.
Well, I don't agree with that. I actually like the quote unquote abstract paintings that are in the that were in the show and in the cat. I think they're very successful.
Yeah, there's kind of a. I have a good sense of design and how things are put together, and that's kind of an underlying element in even the most figurative works. There's a kind of sense of a formal sense, you know, and it's the formal sense, and that sort of drives to making these paintings the paintings they are, you know.
Right. The other aspect to your work that I've always really been blown away by are your pen and ink drawings. And do you consider your pen and ink drawings a separate discipline? I mean, obviously they're separate from the oil painting, but what do you ever choose to portray something in pen and ink and not choose to portray it in oil paint for a deliberate reason?
Oh yeah, I just love to draw. And basically I used to make sort of dark ink wash drawings that were monochromatic watercolors. I also do a lot of drawings with charcoal or colored chalk. These pen and ink drawings that when I came to this country, I needed to have some kind of outlet. And since I got pretty much a cold shoulder of these galleries out here, and I had to sort of make my work known, I started making posters for cultural and, at the time, also political events. First, I did those in halftone, like wash drawings. And there was always kind of reproduction qualities, because it was always done on the cheap, and it was always sort of like a borrowed press and all that. And I realized that if I draw in line, in sheer black and white, they would reproduce really extremely well, and I would not lose a whole lot of quality in the work, especially if they would be reduced a little bit. They ended up tighter and sharper, and they would really be effective, and they would also be relatively cheap to do.
What kind of pen are those done with? Is that a dip pen or is that a rapidograph?
No, it's a dip pen. It's a little Croquevil.
And how do you get that incredibly sustained? I look at them, I'm really, really impressed by how the fluidity of the line and how you are able to do that without even putting anything, mapping it out in pencil. It's just like a direct line from your brain to the page. When you did the, getting back to the Views of Mount Hood series, were those done completely out of your head?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to encourage you in any way. Have you ever thought about that, doing another series like that again?
Well, the problem, I did a whole lot of these kind of drawings, and they came really out of automatic surrealist techniques.
Henry Metzl.
Surrealist show, yeah,
right.
Anywhere you just sort of make this sort of random kind of, you know, lines of, like, be sort of like looking at coffee grounds and
right.
and see the future.
Right.
It's, you know, you make this sort of random kind of linear structure sort of spontaneously, and then you sort of stare at them and say, well, I wonder what kind of figures I could make
right.
out of that. And you, and then you manipulate that around, and if you keep that really precise, it has a kind of highly subjective but also a very objective kind of nature because of its binary quality, and then set some sort of space or suggestion of landscape against it, and they become very spatial and they become very mysterious, and they have this sort of illusion of distortion to them, the distortion that came out of the original gesture.
Right.
The distortion is not, I'm going to make distorted figures, but the nature, the process of a drawing created that distortion, because out of this random shape, I had to somehow form these figures. At least I sort of gave myself that assignment. And I did that for a while, and I was, you know, successful, and they were, like, you know, sort of morbid and somewhat sexualized, and I made them sort of like pulsing, and make these simple lines as if they were breathing and alive and visceral. But it also became a kind of a method, and it became manneristic and repetitive, and I decided that I didn't want to get, you know, repeat myself over and over and over again.
Right.
So I just sort of stepped away from it. But there's elements in these kind of drawings, which I did then, which still really occur.
I wanted to bring that up. Thank you for bringing that up. In other words, I thought that series was a real breakthrough, and it sort of propelled your later work into a higher dimension. And I do think that when you go down to see the show at the Halle Ford Museum, that we're speaking to Hank Pander, we are kind of running out of time, so I want to try to get more in, that there's a very, more than any other artist I know in Portland, you have the widest range of subjects. I mean, it's not like everything you do is negative and traumatic and pessimistic. It's also, you do a lot of beautiful, you know, portraits and beautiful flower paintings, which have, you know, provide sort of a visual relief from the heaviness of some of the other works.
And they're fun to do. Also, so, you know, I make a living in my work too, you know. So I make this, you know, grand sort of paintings about, the you know, like personal history. But they don't fly out the door.
Right,
I make my
not.
Living entirely of my work, so I have to occasionally sort of reach out a little bit to whatever potential clients there are. And so sometimes there's works which are a little bit more accessible. And also, I grew up in a world, my dad used to work for, like, bulb flower growers. I grew up around a lot of really wonderful still life painting. I love making watercolors. I've done them since I was a child. And so, you know, there's a, you know, a kind of a range. You know, I'm skillful, so I can do a lot of things.
You know? Were you aware, I know that your parents came from Friesland, you know, northern, very north part of Holland, and I think we might have mentioned Emil Nold, the other great watercolors from that region. He was... if everybody out there, he's an incredible watercolorist too. Emil Nold.
We looked at Nold in art school. You know, there was a big Nold exhibition, I remember, in I think 1958 or so in Amsterdam.
The other aspect of your work that I like quite a bit is it seems to not be, you're not afraid, you're fearless about taking on issues that other artists simply won't get into. For instance, the military-industrial complex. There's an overriding sense when you look at a lot of your work of sort of shadows of the sense of the military-industrial complex dominating the American sensibility. And only, I think, a foreigner, you know, somebody from Holland or an immigrant, I don't know how else you want to think well, yeah, I can see it so clearly.
There's probably the fact that I lived so far away and somewhat isolated from my background made it possible for me to make these paintings about the war. I don't think there's a lot of Dutch artists in my generation who make paintings about the remembering the Second World War.
Maybe it's too close to
home.
You
have to really be sort of away from it. Another element is that, you know, I grew up in Europe surrounded by European paintings. So there, I was exposed to like German Expressionism. Mm-hmm. I was exposed to Neue Sachlichkeit. I was exposed to art which was critical of fascism. I grew up surrounded with a lot of paintings which really dealt directly with the circumstances artists were confronted with. And me moving to the United States of America, I found myself as a Dutch immigrant artist in this enormous country, which was frightening and huge, but sort of exciting. And I thought, you know, what the hell am I going to do here? You know, American art, I didn't grow up in New York. I didn't grow up in the art institutes here in Oregon, all that. I was completely formed when I came here. And I thought, well, you know, I used to paint Holland. I used to paint the Dutch landscape and the dike works and the reconstruction, the post-war reconstruction in Holland. I did paintings of that and my love for the space and the skies and the mood and all that. And so basically I continued doing that in the United States. And of course, the United States is not the little Holland, but it's enormous country, which is extremely influential, both technologically and culturally and militarily in the world. And I became really curious about those kind of elements. If I could find things in the landscape which reflected the United States in terms of what the kind of un-Dutch quality.
You certainly have found them, and the show proves it. And it's an incredible show. And one thing I also got a sense of, which is a little surreal, it was almost as if a Dutch master, you know, 300 from 300 years ago were somehow transported to this world. How would he see it? And then I come up with you. You're kind of like somebody born at the wrong time, because your painting technically is way above most others' people's ability. It's certainly around here. Most Americans aren't trained to the level you are trained. They can't draw like that.
They
can't
train like differently. That.
They're playing different. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't trained like that, and most people I know weren't trained like. We weren't trained to draw that well as
but
well.
We are trained in new media and in installation, conceptual art. I come out of an entirely different world.
Well, the thing is that one thing I really like about your work is what I just talked about, the fact that it has this direct line with tradition, and it really is, you do restrict yourself to painting and drawing and watercolor, and that's it.
What I can. Well, I used to work in theater, I've done public art and all that, so I've also extended in big installations and light projections.
But it's still painting and drawing as your fundamental.
But yeah, pretty much, that's sort of, that's pretty much all
I know that I just wanted to say I'm really sorry about your wife Dolores passing away about 8 months ago, and I know that's been another form of trauma for you. And are you going to address that in your work at all?
That's actually what I've been doing lately. Is just I took care of her with my sister and I. We took care of her until she died at home. I wanted to keep her at home. She said, "I love my house." So I didn't really want her to leave her house. But I've taken care sometimes of people who had AIDS and stuff. So I've been around death a little bit, but not, I cared a lot. Dolores and I were close.
Right.
And it was a really kind of a panic sort of moment-to-moment situation to see somebody you really care about just decline so fast and die. And then having to give her morphine and it was just awful. But at the same time, I'm really glad I did it. But so I had these, this sort of imagery about her. So I've been making paintings about these last moments in her life.
Well, it's sort of like Edvard Munch. We don't paint what we see. We paint what we saw. You know, it's sort of like memory. It ties into your whole. Unfortunately, we have to cut it out. Unfortunately, I'm really bummed. But this has been Tom Kramer with Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM. Please, everyone, go down and see the show curated by Roger Hull at the Haley Ford Museum of Art down in Salem, Oregon. It's a major world historical event, and it's not to be missed. And it closes, what, the end of this month?
The 27th of March is the last day.
So you only have like two more weeks. So.
And the works on paper parts come down already.
I believe it should be required for people to go down and see it. So I'm ordering you, go down and see the show. Thanks.